Oceana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malthus again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Sean Stiers and Eric Hansen.
Welcome to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beats. Along with Notre Dame football insider Eric Hansen, I'm Sean Stiers. Darren Pritchett is heading right into the heart of that Nor'easter with the Notre Dame hockey team as they head to Bridgeport, Connecticut for Friday's NCAA tournament against Michigan Tech, their tournament opener against Michigan Tech. That'll start at 3 o'clock Friday afternoon, and you will hear it on our sister station Z94.3 FM. Hope you're having a good afternoon. Sunshine. It remains chilly in South Bend, but I guess we'll at least take some sunshine. How are we doing today, Eric Hansen?
I'm doing good. I am very grateful for the sunshine today.
Yeah, that's right. Stay grateful for the sunshine. We've got a lot of Notre Dame football talk coming your way today. Want to start, though, before we get to the football conversation, with some Notre Dame basketball news, specifically Bonzi Colson Notre Dame basketball news. There was an initial report earlier today from Yahoo Sports saying that Bonzi Colson had indeed broken his left foot again. He obviously re-injured his foot Saturday in the NIT loss to Penn State that ended the season, but not so fast, my friends. Bonzi tells the South Bend Tribune and Tom Noy that doctors have not yet determined if he actually broke his foot a second time. He is in a walking boot and on crutches, but he says, quote, "We're still trying to figure it out," end quote. So that is the latest on that. The initial report earlier was that he had rebroken the foot, and I think we probably all assumed that he probably did, but Tom Noy, I saw he tweeted a day or two ago that the x-ray was inconclusive and they hadn't figured anything out, and that is what the report that Tom has filed this afternoon since that Yahoo report, that not yet determined if he's actually broken it. So he's in a walking boot and crutches, and we'll have more with Tom in the second hour of Sports Beat tonight.
Right. Tom mentioned that Bonzi was in Indianapolis on Tuesday to get a second opinion, that, you know, from here on out, Notre Dame is kind of out of the loop with this, that his representation, which is he's in the process of signing with an agent, and his parents are going to kind of be the spokespeople about this moving forward. I thought it was also interesting that if there is a re-break, he would not be able to participate in the combine, which is early May.
Sounds
NBA
right.
Combine, but that he didn't think Bonzi was going to participate anyways in that, kind of given what his status is and, you know, what he's been able to put on tape and so forth. So interesting situation. I can really feel for him. I mean, regardless of whatever the extent of the injury is, he was certainly in pain. And you were there with me on Saturday, and I thought, you know, Darren and I talked about it. One of the coolest things I've seen this year and maybe in a long time was Bonzi checking himself
right
in for the last 35 seconds or so of the game on Saturday, just to kind of be out on the floor with his teammates, even though he wasn't going to do anything, it was a really cool gesture.
Well, and at the time, you kind of assumed that, okay, the outcome of this game has been determined. There's only a few seconds left, and Mike Bray was kind of shuttling guys and getting the seniors sort of their last goodbye and ovations and things like that. And I thought that that's probably what that was even though he wasn't actually going to do anything, but then we all did find out that it was Bonzi saying, "I'm going back in." That's all there is to it. So we walked back out there on the floor, and he did get to kind of wave to the crowd and all that kind of stuff at the end of things. And he was, I think he was actually right over there in front of you and Tim Priester and Matt Freeman and some of those guys, Lou Somogyi, when the final seconds did tick off the clock.
Yeah, he embraced Martin Gebben. I think that was the first thing that happened, and then he was waving to the, you know, to the fans and kind of pointing to them, and it was a neat moment. But it was just really hard to see him in pain and given everything that's happened with his Notre Dame career and what he's done and been part of the, you know, group that, you know, went to back-to-back Elite Eights and, you know, kind of set Notre Dame as a cool basketball school again. I mean, yeah. I don't think if it's not for Bonzi and Pat Connaughton and that whole group, you know, and some of those guys are older and some are the Matt Farrells and the Bonzis of the world, I don't think you have this great recruiting class with five freshmen, you know, four of whom are top 100 guys, and then transfer Juwan Durham coming in.
That's very true.
Yeah, I think it's exciting what the future of Notre Dame men's basketball may be headed, because you've got this influx of talent and you got it all coming at the same time. So it's going to be really interesting how it all kind of meshes together with DJ Harvey coming back from his injury. Elijah Burns looks like he's going to have some recovery time too. This is really exciting and interesting. But I think the cool thing about Bonzi and Matt, they kind of showed the young guys how to do things, you know, how to be leaders, how to do things the right way in a program. So they kind of have the template set there for them.
Set a different standard, and now those guys that you mentioned, TJ Gibbs, Rex Pfluger, they've got a solid core of guys with some definite experience. It's going to be probably, and I'll have to kind of run this through Tom, obviously, it'll be one of the younger teams that Mike Bray has ever had. Mike talked about that. It was kind of the start of his post-game press conference the other day. It was somber, as you would expect, and getting through the Bonzi questions. And then the question kind of came up, and we'll hear this in the second hour tonight, sort of about the toll that it took on Mike Bray and the team as a whole and everything. And then it sort of turned into the mood sort of shifted a little bit as now, okay, so what's next year going to look like in some of those sort of things. But it's definitely it is interesting, though, how Mike Bray kind of caught a second wind a few years ago with those guys when Connaughton and Jaron Grant and these guys that we're talking about, Matt Farrell and Bonzi Colson and Martin Gebben and Austin Torres, who ended up being the winningest class in Notre Dame basketball history. But the shift to the ACC, and it didn't look so good immediately, but then things really turned out really well by the time it was all said and done. Obviously, there's not much you can do about the injuries that they had this year, and it is just sad that it had to end that way. And hopefully Bonzi's health does turn around, and if he's not going to go to the combine and stuff like that anyway, he's got a lot of time to kind of rest and heal and get ready. I think there's enough tape on him, and NBA guys should pretty much know what they're going to get from Bonzi Colson. So hopefully he's got time to rest and it gets better down the road and he's able to continue his career.
Absolutely.
All right. It is coming up on 5:16. Eric Hansen, along with me, Sean Steyers, again, Darren Pritchett is with the Notre Dame hockey team. He's got an NCAA tournament hockey coming up Friday from Bridgeport, Connecticut, and you'll hear it on Z94.3 FM. Eric did a little IndyInsider.com chat today, so we're going to go through some of the questions that Eric took in his chat today, and let's start with one from Victor. He said, Brian Kelly, from what he's heard, hasn't mentioned Ian Book much so far this spring. Is that worth reading into?
I don't think the answer is yes and no. Here's what I think is happening. Here's what I think is happening there. I think that Brian, in his mind, believes that he saw, and he spoke to this, an incredible effort on Brandon Wimbush's part in January and February to get himself ready for spring. Mm-hmm. And I also think in Brian's mind, he felt like this was a fixable problem all along, and he does not want to give the impression that anything is going backward unless it actually is. So all he has seen so far are positive signs. There's a lot of more steps to go through, but I think that's why he has mentioned it. I think that if he gets too much on the Ian Book track, it kind of cuts the legs out from under Brandon right now, and there's a lot of positive momentum with that. So, you know, I think, Sean, in terms of the media being able to confirm that we're seeing that same kind of thing in practice, we'll know a lot more after Saturday. Those of us that are going to be...
As long as it's not a special teams practice.
Yeah, yeah. Well, those of us who are part of the coaching clinic group are going to see a full practice tomorrow morning. Mm-hmm. And then all of us will also see a practice Saturday. And I think once we see those two, we can kind of confirm whether we're seeing the same things that Brian has seen up to this point. And I know that there's people shouting at their radio saying, well, what about, you know, how can they test and see, you know, because he looked good in practices at times last year. How can they tell that this isn't going to come falling apart at the seams against Don Brown and one of the best defenses in the country?
Right.
You know, as a coach, you have to be able to test your players that way. You have to be able to see without going live and risking injury. You have to be able to measure that. I don't think they tested Brandon last spring in those things because they never anticipated that that was going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. Everything in his past was that if there was going to be a hiccup, it was going to be in his running game and not in his throwing. That had never been his history. So,
well, and that's something Darren and I have talked about, where we really didn't know what he was going to be as a runner, because that was something that we really never saw that element very much.
Right.
We saw him take off a couple times and he'd have these runs downfield, but we never saw that as an integral part of the offensive game plan in the practices, whether it was the fall or last spring. But we did see a guy who was showing that he was a very accurate passer when it was live, just as far as corners right. against receivers and those kind of things.
Right. I mean, why it deteriorated, we've kind of gone through that over that a little bit, and I think that Notre Dame coaching staff is kind of doubling back on that, and again, just trying to evolve the passing game. You know, there were things beyond Brandon Wimbush that created that. Even though he had a great running game and a great offensive line, I think that maybe, again, with a new offensive coordinator, new receivers coach, they wanted to look at too many guys, and that rotation was too wide. You know, it seemed like a great idea at the time, but then there wasn't chemistry between Brandon and many of the receivers because you had all these new faces, Cam Smith and Freddie Canteen, and you know, Kevin Stefferson was out of the mix, then he was reintroduced to the mix. Mm-hmm. You had Chase Claypool moving all over the field to different positions. He played all three last year at different points. So, ultimately, I think what Brian Kelly wants to be able to say at the end of spring is Brandon Wimbush took a significant step forward, and so did Ian Book.
Right.
Because you want Ian Book to be ready to play, whether there's an injury, whether there's a recurrence of the problems last year, you want him ready to play. Because I think with Phil Jakovic not here at this point, it's not real realistic that he could help you in September and October as good as he is. I think it's asking a lot. And I think Nick Saban would say the same thing about Tua Tagovailoa. I mean, he in January, it was almost a whole different season by then for Tua. I think early in the season for Alabama, things were going well enough with Jalen Hurts, and I don't think Tua would have been the same player in October that he was in January.
Sure. All right, I'm going to piggyback off that question with another quarterback question. This one is from Kyle in Charleston, South Carolina, and he touched on some of the points that you hit there, but maybe you can get a little deeper because he got pretty deep with his question, and I'll read it off here. He said, do you question not having the quarterbacks go live this spring? I just don't feel like we're going to learn anything about Wimbush without making him uncomfortable in some way. It's not like he was struggling throwing a quick short screen pass in the spring fall last year. Practice-wise, everything has always been pretty positive for him, but we don't get the same Wimbush in games that we see in practice. How on earth are coaches going to have any confidence they will get the MSU version of Wimbush rather than the Miami version?
I think it's a great question, and it's something that coaches face all the time when they're trying to figure out how to best evolve their quarterbacks and not get them hurt. And I would say the vast majority of them say it's just not worth getting a long-term injury in the spring to make a quarterback live. So how can they replicate game conditions and really test the things that it was a Kyle was talking about there? I think what happened last year, Sean, is, you know, again, Brandon hadn't really taken any significant snaps since his freshman year. And even then, Kizer was getting so many because they had to get him, they had to keep him moving in terms of becoming better and better as a starter with the injury to Malik Zaire. So Brandon was on scout teams a large part of his sophomore year. He wasn't learning the Notre Dame offense. He was learning things, but he wasn't learning the Notre Dame offense. And then he gets to spring. They got a new offensive coordinator. And I think where fans get a little bit confused is Brian Kelly said this is the Brian Kelly offense. Other people said it's the Chip Long offense. Mm-hmm. You know, the way I saw it is it's the Chip Long touches on the Brian Kelly base. Chip Long brought his because Cam Smith knew the offense from Arizona State when he walked in the door.
That's true, yeah.
And so I think there was Brian Kelly principles with Chip Long's touch and a lot of Chip Long's touch to it. So I think last spring they were really concerned about installing that offense, and they didn't test things. One of the first things Brian Kelly mentioned the day before spring practice started way back when we had a press conference March 5th was one of the objectives was to test their weaknesses and go after their weaknesses. And I think that's where they do this. And I think one of the things I would ask Chip Long tomorrow, or Mike Varell, or you will ask Chip Long tomorrow, is how do you simulate that? Because I think people really want to hear that answer. I think at different times, Brian has done that in the spring with quarterbacks, and he certainly has the personnel to do it this spring. They are good enough athletically to really show Brandon looks that he's going to see. There are times their defense hasn't been strong enough to really simulate the elite defenses. I think this defense, when you think about who's in it, the cornerbacks, the evolving pass rush, Jerry Tillery, Tavon Coney, and those are pretty high-end players and pretty experienced players where they should be able to give Brandon looks without having to take him to the ground. You know, I think there was a time last spring and maybe even in August, it got a little bit silly in that when Brandon took off running, if somebody was within 12 yards of him, they were blowing the whistle.
Right.
I think let people get a little bit closer to simulate the pressure because they were really, I mean, it was really hands off.
And do you think that some of that was because of the fact that at that point, Wimbush was a lot farther ahead of Ian Book than maybe he is right now.
Right, and Ian was, you know, if Wimbush had gone down, then you had Ian Book and Avery Davis, and I don't think they're winning 10 games last year mm-hmm. with that version of Ian Book and with Avery Davis being the backup. So I think they were extra careful. But so there's always a balance that you're trying to get there. But most coaches would side with not having their quarterbacks hit.
Definitely. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll do more from Eric's IndyInsider.com chat recap from today, including a question about Bob Diaco, the former Irish defensive coordinator. He's going to be at the coaches' clinic this Friday. Everybody's getting their chili powder out and getting ready for that one. So we're looking forward to that, but we'll ask Eric his thoughts on that. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. It is 27 minutes after the hour with Notre Dame football Indy insider Eric Hansen. I'm Sean Steyers. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat rolls on, along with Notre Dame football insider Eric Hansen of the South Bend Tribune. I'm Sean Steyers. Darren Pritchett off with Notre Dame hockey for some NCAA tournament hockey this weekend on Z94.3 FM. Notre Dame basketball insider Tom Noy joins me for the second hour of the show tonight. We'll talk about that Bonzi Colson injury and kind of put a wrap on the end of the Notre Dame basketball season, and also talk some NCAA tournament basketball with the games starting back up tomorrow here on WSBT. We'll have games tomorrow and Friday right after Sports Beat ends at 7 o'clock, and then we'll have the games as well this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, the Sweet 16 and the Elite 8, as March Madness from Westwood One continues on WSBT over the next 4 days. All right, we got into some of Eric's IndyInsider.com chat for today. Bob Diaco's coming, and there was a question about that. Bob Diaco, the former Notre Dame defensive coordinator, is coming to the coaches' clinic this weekend. He's going to speak Friday, and it sounds like you're going to be there. Are you anticipating that highly, Eric, the return of Bob Diaco?
Well, I think it's always kind of interesting because he was just such a interesting guy when it came to the media. I mean,
he's a werewolf.
You would ask a question and it could be over, the answer could be over in one word, or it could be over 22 minutes later and involve the Beatles. And you know, I kind of got him, and so I was able to get the answers that I needed from him. Didn't particularly, I think, enjoy the media. He felt like there were things that he wanted to change about the media. And I think that's, you know, I think Brian Kelly thinks the same thing. But I think Brian Kelly plays the game a lot better.
Yeah.
And Bob Diaco just...
Because wasn't a problem for Diaco when he went to UConn? He tried to make some of those changes, and it just didn't work.
Yeah, and really he had to adapt when he went from Cincinnati to Notre Dame, because he was pretty reclusive at Cincinnati his 1 or 2 years there. He wasn't there Brian's whole time, and he had to be a little bit more visible at Notre Dame and really struggled. And when I, you know, had first heard that he had gotten the Connecticut job, you know, I thought he, you know, when I knew the Connecticut SID, I said, you're going to have to work with him, because, you know, not all coaching, being a head coach, is about the coaching. And I thought Diaco would struggle with the non-part of coaching, with the fundraising, with media, with a lot of those other things. I did not think he was ready for it. To a certain extent, you either have to play the game or you have to be Nick Saban and be able to win at such a high level it doesn't matter, because that's part of it. But I think he was a really good coach at that point. You know, defenses and offenses evolve, and I'm curious where his philosophy is defensively, because I know after 2012, Brian felt like, had Diaco stuck around after 2013, he would have nudged him into more of an aggressive direction because offenses were changing and Notre Dame's defense, as it was configured, wasn't going to get the job done. So I'm curious where he is from a X's and O's standpoint. I think that's kind of where I would like to see how his defense is.
And he's sort of in between right now, because he's an analyst at Oklahoma, right?
He's an analyst at Oklahoma, which is a non-on-field position. You know, he does a lot of the analytics.
Right.
And so there are some analysts that are much more involved than others, certainly here His name is escaping me. The man that passed away, that was their safeties coach at one point, helped
Bob Elliott.
Bob Elliott.
Yeah.
Bob Elliott was ultra involved and really, really a valuable analyst. There's some others that are less involved and less impacting with their. So it'll be interesting to see what he does at Oklahoma, because they can certainly use an improved defense to go with their powerful offenses.
True. We'll look forward to hearing some of your takeaways from the Bob Diaco speech next week on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. Okay, continuing from the IndyInsider.com chat today, there was a comment from Don in Phoenix. What are your way too early impressions of the new coaches? Haven't really got a whole lot of chances to see them yet.
Yeah, I would say Clark Lea is the easiest to evaluate, because you know where our perch is for the media, and he's a little bit closer to us. Mike Elston is right on top of us, so
we still get Mike Elston.
Yeah,
and thank goodness, because we need some entertainment that early in the morning, and he typically provides it.
He
us.
Does provide it, and he's meticulous. I am fascinated by the way he coaches, because he's explaining the drills to the players, and sometimes you see a drill and you say, well, what's really the purpose of that? And he goes through it, and he's very meticulous, and if they don't do it, they're doing it again. Clark's, from the standpoint of Clark, he's a guy that's really super intelligent, and sometimes those kind of people have trouble boiling it down to digestible pieces of information, and he doesn't have that problem. And there is, at this point, a really great rapport, I think, between the players and Clark. And I think a lot of it is, he's not a rah-rah guy, he's not a super emotional guy, but he's a guy that they believe is putting them in the best positions to succeed. Mm-hmm. I think there's that deep belief. Now, we'll see that get tested by some, you know, offenses next season, but right now that's a deep belief, and I think that's a good buy-in for Clark Lea to have.
And the addition of up-downs for the defense as well this year.
Right.
Right. And we saw some of that with Mike Elston as well.
Right.
The guys weren't quite on point with what they were supposed
to be Brian
doing.
Kelly talked about peer accountability and accountability, just building a culture of accountability. I want to see a little bit more of that over a longer version of practice. The last practice we were in, boy, it seemed like they stretched for a long time.
I know.
My coffee was almost gone by the time they were done stretching. Terry Joseph, he looks like, I mean, he's definitely a guy that's into the fundamentals, but he looks like a guy, and I think this is smart on his part, that is following through on his promise of a clean slate for everybody, where he's really watching before, you know, he trotted out last year starting safeties, and I don't think that they will stay as the starting safeties. I think they'll get passed up, but they could still be really valuable rotation players. I think he wants to learn as much as he can. And so right now, this first part of spring, he's learning about those players. I think there's going to be a point where he gets more proactive in terms of the depth chart, in terms of the dynamic of the defense. So I think, again, maybe more observation mode for him. Jeff Quinn is at the absolute farthest point away from us on the practice field with the offensive line. So, you know, I'm using my binoculars, you are too, to kind of watch what's going on down there. And it's more the feedback that we've gotten from the players than my actual observations. He seems like a guy that's into axioms, and he's philosophical, and has lots of inspirational quotes. You know, Harry Hiestand wasn't quite like that. Harry was more, I mean, you could hear Harry from that side, that far away. You could hear Harry's language.
And it's a lot quieter overall, yeah, with the exception of
it is quieter,
right,
but
in front of us.
But I would say this, I think that the players seem to be really happy that at least the X's and O's part of it, and some of the philosophical things like playing your best five guys, hook into what Harry was teaching. So there's not, okay, we're doing these techniques all different, and the philosophy is different. He wants guards to be guards and tackles. No, there's none of that. It's a continuation of what Harry was teaching. It's just being taught in a little bit different way.
It is 20 minutes in front of the hour on Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Continuing Eric's IndyInsider.com chat from today. Let's go, speaking of another one of the assistants, this question is from Don in Phoenix. He says, I get the fact that Tom Rees knows what it takes to be an Indy quarterback and is most likely very good with the mental aspects of the position. Is he the guy to help Brandon Wimbush with the mechanics of the job, or is there someone else on staff to assist with that part of Wimbush's development?
Well, it's funny because I kind of got in a debate with a guy email, and I don't usually do this, but I engaged in it, and it was an interesting debate. And I really wanted, you know, he came at me pretty hard because of something I said on the air, and I really wanted to hear him out because I wanted to hear his frustration. And I think that, you know, I brought up the fact that I thought Brian Kelly was an asset in the quarterback room. I don't know that he's always been an asset on game day to quarterback development. And he cited some things that I cited in an article that I put in an article that, you know, you could argue that from year one to year two with some of the Notre Dame quarterbacks, there hasn't been progress. And I think it's really important for him to show that with Brandon Wimbush. And so I really wanted to hear this guy out. And I still think as long as you're delivering a consistent message, I think it's important for Brian Kelly to be involved in that because of his experience. And while it hasn't necessarily happened for him, DeShone Kizer was a non-top 250 player that ended up being a top 50 draft choice. At Cincinnati, you can look at Tony Pike, zero-star player that ended up getting drafted. How many Cincinnati quarterbacks have been drafted in the sixth round or higher? Dan LeFevre at Central Michigan. So he has had some success with quarterbacks. And I think, you know, it's really difficult to evaluate Tom Rees as a quarterback's coach, given his limited experience. You don't have really much of a body of work, positively or negatively, to look at. He is a must listen to for me when I go to the coaching clinic. That will be absolutely one where I'm sitting in the front row and taking notes.
All right. Very good. It is about 17 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Now, pro day is tomorrow, and that'll be after practice. For you, it's going to be a really long day because you get to see practice in the morning as part of the coaching clinic, then talk to the two coordinators, the right. offensive coordinator, Chip Long, defensive coordinator, Clark Lee, and then after that, it's pro day where nine different former Notre Dame players, including Malik Zaire, will be there working out tomorrow. So a couple different pro day questions. The first one is from Otis, my man in Indianapolis. He says, I see that pro day is coming up Thursday. Who has the most to gain among the Irish players?
Well, there were five of them that were at the combine, and that's an invitation-only event in Indianapolis. And then there are four that were not invited. Of the five that were at the combine, definitely Josh Adams has the most to prove, to gain, because at the combine in Indianapolis, he did the bench press, he did interviews, and he did nothing else. He didn't do the 40, he didn't do the jumps. So it will be important for him to do those tomorrow and to show well in those. You know, I think he can still move up and down a little bit. I think he's still a middle round guy, but he could push himself up with some good performances. Certainly his character, his interview, he's going to come off well in that kind of stuff. But how is he going to run? What's his 40 time going to look like? You know, how agile is he? How healthy is he?
Mm-hmm.
And then as far as the four guys that didn't get invited, I think Niles Morgan has the best chance to move up and show people that maybe last year's so-so, I don't want to call it a so-so season. It wasn't spectacular. I think he had a stronger year in 2016 than he did in 2017. He was more impactful player. And I wonder if some of that was a shoulder that never seemed to heal completely. It'll be interesting to see and hear from him how he, if he's admits that that was part of the problem, if other people mention that. And also how he runs and how he performs in drills, because I still think there's an awfully good player there in Niles Morgan. But he is, I was surprised with Scott Wright that he didn't have him in his top 300. I thought certainly Niles Morgan would be a top 300 player. Yeah. So I think he's got the best chance to change people's minds of the four guys that didn't get invited.
I like that one. Okay, now Malik Zaire is going to be there throwing passes. I think we all pretty much know that the throwing accuracy is not necessarily his strength. Do you have any concern? It is pro day. It's not the NFL combine. Do you have a concern that any of these guys catching passes, whether it's St. Brown, Wisher, or Adams, that it could affect them one way or the other?
You mean Smythe?
What did I say?
Wisher.
Oh, Wisher. Yeah, you're right. Durham Smythe. Sorry.
Wisher's still on the team.
That's right.
But you know, I think a lot of it has to do with how much has Malik worked with these guys recently. When Everett came up to do it a couple years ago, he was a disaster. He was he looked like he hadn't prepped for this at all, not only with those receivers, but with any receivers. He looked like he kind of just walked in and thought, I was shocked. And there were footballs that he didn't like. He wanted a different football, and one of the coaches kind of barked at him and said, "You use that football?" And it was so a lot of it with these guys that come back is, you know, again, how hard has Malik worked at this, and how much has he got chemistry with those guys? You know, him being a left-hander, if they haven't thrown with him in a while, that kind of throws you for a little loop. The one thing is they all have some familiarity with him from some point in his career. They've all caught passes from Malik before, whether it be in practice or in a game. And especially if I were Josh Adams, I would have, you know, gone to Malik and, you know, whatever, sent a limo for him and brought him in, because Josh really needs to be able to show that dimension of his game, that he can be a pass receiver. So that's going to be kind of the unknown tomorrow. If I had a guess, I think Malik's going to take this seriously, that he's got a lot of pride and he's going to want to show off to everybody that maybe everybody was wrong about him. You know, I don't know that what this can turn in for him individually, but I don't think he's a selfish guy, and I do think that he would want to help those other guys look their best.
All right. Last question then from Jude, also about the combine. Do you think that there is any way that Quentin Nelson helps his stock tomorrow at the pro day?
Well, I think that he's probably going to arrange some interviews and do some interviews, and I think he probably will do the position drills just because that's who he is. I don't think he's going to rerun the 40 or you know, he had a tight hammy at the combine, so he missed a couple of things. I don't think that he's going to do those because there's really nothing for him to gain. But I think, you know, he's going to do the position drills and look good in them because that's just kind of who he is.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that McGlinchey and Nelson are there helps the other teammates because it brings in more eyes and it also brings in higher level decision makers because those guys are both first rounders.
All right, sounds good. So again, Pro Day is tomorrow. We'll also have interviews with both coordinators, offensive and defensive coordinators tomorrow. So a lot coming up on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat tomorrow night. And then Evan Sharpley and I will talk about some of it as well. Leprechaun Lunch Friday at noon, and then we'll have even more coming up on Friday's Sports Beat, and that'll be after. No, will that be after or right before you go to the coaches' clinic on Friday? Sports Beat.
I'll have gone to most of the coaching clinic stuff before I do Sports Beat.
Because I was remembering some of it is in the evening.
It is.
So
I have to look at my agenda, but I remember Reese being either in the morning or the afternoon.
Okay.
At a time where I can get to. So
All right. Sounds good. Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. My five question of the day is coming up next, and it deals with the coordinators tomorrow, the things that Eric is looking for when he speaks with Irish defensive coordinator Clark Lee and offensive coordinator Chip Long tomorrow after tomorrow morning's practice. 10 minutes in front of the top of the hour, Budweiser's weekday sports beat. 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Offensive and defensive coordinators from Notre Dame meet with the media tomorrow. So with that in mind, the five things Eric's looking for when defensive coordinator Clark Lee, who will be speaking with the media for the first time since becoming defensive coordinator, and offensive coordinator Chip Long speak with the media. Number five, Eric.
I really want to find out from Chip Long what his hope is with the whole wide receiver configuration, how Chase Claypool fits in there. Again, I still think Chase's best position is the one Boykin plays, which is to the close side of the field. I think he can be a good slot receiver. I think he could actually play outside on the other side. But Chase is, I still think, the highest ceiling receiver on the roster, and just kind of how he thinks the wide receiver thing is going.
Number four.
Number four, the progress of the safeties. Again, you know, Terry Joseph, the defensive backs coach, really trying to kind of soak this all in with Clark Lee. I'm curious what he wants to get out of the safeties, how deep they think the position can be. I know that he thinks Derek Allen, the freshman, can help them this year when he gets on the roster. But, you know, that's going to be key to whether that defense can be good or really good, is how that safety position's coming along.
Absolutely. Number three.
Last year Notre Dame really started off well in terms of their pressures. The sacks were way up. Turnovers gained were way up. I think they were even in the top 10 nationally at one point. And then it slipped at the end of the year. What Clark feels like can be done to make sure that that's a consistent evolution through the whole season, that pass rush is improved and stays improved throughout the season.
All right, number two.
The one thing about Clark is, as knowledgeable as he is, he's never called a game before. He's never been a defensive coordinator. You know, Mike Elko had been defensive coordinator forever at a lot of smaller places, mm-hmm. like the Merchant Marine Academy.
That's right.
So what goes into calling a game? How confident is he, and how maybe does he differ from Mike Elko in terms of how he believes that he will call games without giving away all the trade secrets?
Sure, absolutely. The top five things Eric's looking for when Clark Lee and Chip Long speak with the media tomorrow. Number five, what's Chip Long's hope for the wide receivers, and what's Chase Claypool's fit with that group? Number four, the progress of the safeties. Number three, the pass rush for the defense. Number two, what goes into calling a game for new defensive coordinator Clark Lee? And the number one thing Eric's looking for tomorrow.
This is what Kyle had asked in the live chat, is how do you simulate, in a twisted kind of way, how do you simulate testing Brandon Wimbush and Ian Book with game conditions? How do you find out whether they actually are improving or if they're just looking better in practice?
Right.
And so that's that. I'm really curious to see Chip's response to that.
That's the My Five question of the day. Budweiser's weekday sports beat wraps up the first hour right after this on 96.1 WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section.
Well, Tom Noy has an injury update on Bonzi Colson that nullifies the earlier injury update from somebody else earlier in the day. How's that?
Yeah, there you go.
We will have the Notre Dame football chat transcript. Mike did a really cool story with former Notre Dame football player Justin Brent, who is in the Sweet 16 with Nevada's basketball team. He's playing both sports for the Wolfpack. We'll have an Indy hockey advance from Finn, a Notre Dame women's basketball feature from Anthony, and much, much more.
Sounds good. Thank you very much, Eric Hansen. We will talk to you tomorrow. Tom Noe coming up, second hour.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their 9th in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Sean Stiers and Tom Noe.
Tom Noe in the house for the second hour of Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Who?
Who?
Hello?
Hello?
Tom Noe.
Throw away the script, baby.
Man. There is no script.
Just when you thought, just when you thought we had a show.
That's right.
Turns out we get a different show.
Absolutely. I'm glad that I saw your tweet this afternoon because
I got a little busy.
Thought we had one thing and then we had another. You want to just dive right in?
Why not? Let's do it.
So the initial report today was from Yahoo saying that Bonzi Colson
sources
said Bonzi Colson had broken his foot again. You had already tweeted, what day was it? Sunday or Monday?
Sunday morning. I actually contacted Mike Bray Saturday afternoon after that Penn State loss and knew the x-ray was coming Saturday afternoon. And I said, hey, any updates on the x-ray? Did it show anything? And his response to me was just inconclusive. And that was Sunday morning.
Okay. So that was Sunday. And then earlier today, it was this morning sometime, the Yahoo.
Actually, it was last night. I think it was midnight last night, the Yahoo Sports had just a little something.
Yeah, so they said that he had broken his foot again, and then you talked to Bonzi today.
Purely on accident. I'm not stalking Bonzi Colson.
Just happened to run into him.
I'm over at Notre Dame doing a Notre Dame women's column.
You just cruised back and forth.
I'm staking out the locker room at 1:30 in the afternoon. No, I'm over at Notre Dame doing a column on Jackie Young for Friday as they prepare to go to Spokane, Washington, and play in the Sweet 16. So media access starts at 1:40. As per my usual, I'm 15, 20 minutes early to everything. Make sure I don't miss anything. So I walk in the back door, Joyce Center there, where I've done for the last 20 years. And I turn the corner, and who's limping down the corner and on crutches in a walking boot? Bonzi Colson. So hey, it wasn't a gotcha interview or a corner you interview.
Never done a gotcha interview.
I didn't even pull out my tape, my voice recorder. I just said, hey, look, Bonzi. See the story. What's going on? Everything all right? You know, we just had a little small talk. Back and forth, you know, I explained to him why I was not at the Penn State game on Saturday. I was on another assignment for the South Bend Tribune. We talked a little bit about that, and I said, look, what's the deal? Is your foot broken or not? Let me preface this by saying eventually, once all this happens, it'll probably come out as there's a break somewhere in that foot because of the amount of pain that he's in. And he said, no, they haven't determined that my foot is broken. We're still running tests. He was in Indianapolis on Tuesday to get a second opinion, or maybe it was even a third opinion on his foot. But he's like, you know, right now I'm just trying to figure everything out.
Sir?
Yes?
I have a question, sir.
Sean Stiers, please. You're next.
Thank you. So my question would be, okay, they've done x-rays. X-rays typically fairly simple. You either see a break, you see some kind of fracture, or you don't. Is there inflammation in the foot that might be masking this? I mean, why are they unable to see anything, right? It should be pretty cut and dry. Either they see a break or they don't.
Maybe it's just one of those strange things. Now, there is precedence because Notre Dame went through this with DJ Harvey. It wasn't a foot, but it was a knee. They kept looking and looking and looking, and they didn't see anything with DJ Harvey in his knee, and he kept saying there's something wrong with it. It just doesn't feel right. They finally sent DJ Harvey, the Chicago Bulls team doctor, over in Chicago. They looked at it the same thing and saw the same thing and said, we're really not, we can't tell if there's an issue or if there's cartilage damage, this, that. Like, all the tests they did on DJ Harvey weren't, nothing was showing up on it until he continued to, and then he said, all right, I'm going to rest it. I'm going to go back to practice. Then when he hurt it again, that's when they said, oh, there's a cartilage issue. We're going to have to go in and it's going to be reconstructive. But they didn't, they kept looking for DJ Harvey and couldn't find anything. Maybe they can't find anything because, like you said, the inflammation. Maybe it looks like there's a break, but it's not a clean break. Look, there's, I'd say, and I'm not a doctor, and I didn't stay at a certain hotel chain last night, but I'd say there's somewhere along the line, somebody's going to say there's a hairline fracture or there's another crack in the bone or there's something.
Yeah.
And that will eventually be right. But when national media comes out and says, quote, sources say Bonzi Colson has a broken foot, and I go over to Notre Dame 12 hours later and I see said Bonzi Colson. Hey Bonzi, what's going on with your foot? It was one question. Is your foot broken? And I asked him like three or four times as we were just talking. I said, so your foot's not broken yet. They haven't determined your foot's broken. No, no, no. So he's in a boot. He's on crutches, and he's hoping that whatever happens, he doesn't even know if surgery's needed.
Yeah.
They haven't determined anything as far as surgery, timetable, recovery, this, that, the other. He's still hoping that when the NBA Combine rolls around, May 16th, it starts in Chicago, that he'll be healthy enough to attend the Combine. Not that he's going to play, because as I write in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune, If you're a college player like Bonzi Colson and you've done what Bonzi Colson has done, you have no, there's no need for you to play in the play five.
I would think
five.
So too. And then so, kind of going back a little bit, you talk about okay, he obviously had the surgery, had a titanium screw mm-hmm. put in his foot, and so after the Hampton game, the NIT opener, I asked him just kind of, hey, how you feeling? Oh, great.
Right.
Nothing.
Remember, he's sitting in the locker room.
Yeah.
He's stretched out in his chair. He's got the two bags of ice on his knees. And it was that was always the issue with Bonzi since he came back February 28th. It was never, the foot was like, he's every time I'd ask him about his foot, he'd be like, man, I'm just chilling. You know, the foot's fine. It wasn't always the foot. It was the knees. Because he just wasn't in peak basketball shape,
mm-hmm.
so he's like, man, the foot's fine. It was the knees were hurting, or the hammies were hurting, or his legs were kind of worn down. But it was never a case after a game where Bonzi Colson said, yeah, I think I got a problem with my foot. Never.
Yeah. So after the Penn State game the other day, he was fielding a lot of questions, obviously about. Everything, mm-hmm. the foot, what happened, how he felt it, and the whole thing. And I asked him if he ever gave any consideration to not playing since it was the NIT and not the NCAA tournament. And here's what he said.
No, I wanted to play. I missed so much of the season. I wanted to play. I wanted to cut down nets and MSG. That was never in my mind. I wanted to go out there and play and just enjoy the game. You know, you can't take this game for granted. You know, God's blessed you with talents, and I just wanted to go out there and just play my game. And I just play with passion and energy, so that was never a thought for me.
And it's obviously an unfortunate situation now because there is so much up in the air. I agree with what you said, though, just about the fact I think he's been scouted for the last couple of years now. NBA scouts are always at Notre Dame games. There's what, probably at least four plus, wouldn't you say,
mm-hmm.
at every game. So, I mean, he's been seen quite a bit, and that there's plenty of film out there on him. Not even a question. So they know what they're going to get from a skill standpoint. And so as far as Bonzi's concerned, If he's not thinking about the combine and these workouts and stuff like that, maybe he goes through some interviews, but he's got a lot of time to rest, recuperate, get the thing healed up now.
He should be all right. I mean, even if it's broken, he's got an 8-week recovery. If he goes through the same situation that he just did where they have to do surgery and he's got 8 weeks off his feet, it puts him right around the time of the combine, maybe a little less, but individual workouts really ramp up the third week of May, like right after the combine. That's when guys are going all over the country. They'll do some individual workouts between the end of April when the regular season ends and the combine in mid-May. But the individual workout parade that he'll be on won't start until late May and then go through June. And if he has to go and work out for 15, 20 teams, he'll go work out for 15, 20 teams, and hopefully the foot stands up. Now, two injuries in a span of, what would it be, 3 months? 2 months?
Yeah.
About 2.5 months. That's got to raise a red flag. But I'm telling you, the amount of time and effort and resources that NBA teams put in to evaluating prospects, whether it be medical or psychological or background or personnel, whatever it is, NBA teams will have top medical personnel look at his foot and determine whether or not this thing's going to hold up or it's not going to hold up. And if they say it holds up, it only takes one team to like him.
Wasn't it, was Greg Odom, did he have a foot injury?
He had knee.
Was it knee?
Knee. And it was the same type of knee surgery and procedure that DJ Harvey has undergone. Microfracture knee surgery. So he was never the same after that. Same type of surgery that Chris Thomas had was never the same after that. So we'll see what happens.
A lot of different stuff going on, unfortunately. Mike Bray asked about Bonzi Colson, kind of to summarize his career. And here's what the Irish head coach had to say after Saturday's Penn State game.
It's just an unbelievable story. He was such a pleasure to coach. The edge about him, the toughness about him, the uniqueness of his game. He's such a winner for us. He's one of my favorite I've ever had. You can't pick favorites with your children or your players, and I've got a lot of them over 18 years, but he is one of my all-time favorite, and I think he's got a great chance of being on an NBA roster. It's funny, for all the people that, how big is he? He's not too big. What position does he play? Who does he guard? There's those other guys that go, he just gets it done, man. We just got to bring him in and work him out. He will work out for 20 NBA teams. There'll be so many people intrigued to kind of kick the tires on him and see what he's like physically, and which is great for him.
And we've kind of talked about this at different points before, Tom. His game, the fact that he has developed more of an outside game and just his overall game, is kind of the direction that the NBA is going, so that's a plus for him.
Positionless. And he's a freak on the basketball court. Mm-hmm. He really is. Like, he's listed as 6'6". He might be closer to 6'5", maybe even 6'4". But with his long arms and his ability to just get shots off at crazy angles and make shots, like, can you see it? Say Bonzi Colson is 130% healthy, which we all hope he will be when he begins his NBA journey. Look at him fitting in with a team like Golden State, coming off the bench and giving six, eight minutes here and there and getting 10 points and grabbing 7 rebounds, mm-hmm, and doing stuff like that. Now it's with Bonzi Colson, just like every player that's come through Notre Dame, every player that's tried to make it in the NBA, it's going to come down to fit. If he goes to a team that runs a lot of sets and they're half court and they play a grinded style basketball, I don't know how he fits with that organization. But if he goes somewhere in the Western Conference, plays for the Houston Rockets.
Yeah.
Mike D'Antoni plays in a system like that. We mentioned Golden State. Plays with the Lakers, a team that's young, that needs guys on short, minimum contracts. Tell me he wouldn't fit in there. So I think he's going to get a shot, regardless of how his foot feels, whether it's broken, whether it's not, this, that, whether he gets drafted, whether he doesn't. He's going to go somewhere and play summer league. What happens after that, it's going to be up to him. And like Mike Bray said, he's not a power four. Well, who's he guard? Is he a four? Is he a three? What does he do? It doesn't matter. There are some guys like Bonzi Colson that you just stick out on a basketball court and say, just watch him. Just watch him perform. He's going to rebound. He's going to score. He's going to make a difference. He's going to make shots. He's going to be a good basketball player.
And that was another thing that Mike Bray touched on right after that comment that you heard there, was Martin Inglesby really pushed him to go see him, mm-hmm, at an event in L.A. and just talked about the nose for the ball that Bonzi has. And that's obviously something that we've seen over the last 4 years.
I forget what game. Maybe it was the. Oh, I think it was the Hampton game, the first round NIT game, where he's what, 4 games back from his injury, maybe five games back from his injury. He's diving into the scores table. He's diving on the floor. He's falling into the crowd like he was all over the place. Mm-hmm. And even the game that turned out to be his last before his surgery, that he was playing on a broken foot, that he went for 22-17. There was one sequence where he dived for a loose ball and wound up in the front row, like right underneath the front row of seats there on the one sideline. So the guy was just everywhere, and it's just something where you sit there and you just can't believe that his career is over here, because I remember when he walked in the door, he was out of shape. He was admittedly overweight. He had just started adjusting the contact lenses that he had never worn before. So he was like, and he was the first one to admit it. He was like, I'm in no condition to be playing big time college basketball as a freshman. And then 2-3 months later, Zach August has his academic issue, doesn't go to Atlanta. They need somebody. Martin Gebbins not doing it. They need somebody to come in. And when you saw Bonzi Colson go in and do what he did that night in Midtown Atlanta, gets a bloody nose because he gets popped in the nose and he's bleeding all over the place, you're thinking, this guy's never coming back out of the lineup. And he never did.
Yeah, and early in his career, those first few times that we'd get to see him, he was just a spark plug
right.
kind of guy. Came in and just instant energy. But again, he just always found a way to find the ball and be in the middle of the action. That was always the fun thing, especially early on when we hadn't seen him before. The really fun thing about seeing him get on the floor.
He just played.
Yep.
He just played. And it was like, man, I always remember the one game of Bonzi Colson that just still sticks out for me. There were so many of them. But the day that Notre Dame won at Cameron Indoor Stadium for the first time, and he had like 31 maybe, and he's hitting shots, and he's doing flybys by Mike Krzyzewski after making shots, and he's sticking his tongue out at him. I mean, that was like, and all the Cameron crazies are just booing him. Uh-huh. Like, that was Bonzi Colson personified. He was just, he just had so much fun while he was playing on the basketball court, and he would say it after every game. Didn't matter if he played well, didn't matter if he struggled, didn't matter if they won or lost. He always said, you just can't take this for granted. Like, I love playing basketball, and I can't take it for granted because you never know when you might not have it. Never more apropos than this year where he didn't have it for 15 games.
Absolutely. All right, so some quick comments from Mike Bray about some other guys in the senior class and kind of the legacy that they've left here.
Well, you know, Martin Gebbin was just, what a great story for him to have a great senior year. I'm thrilled for him. I'm very, very proud of him. And, you know, Austin Torres carved out a pretty darn good career here over 5 years. I'm, you know, he has been the energy guy. He's been a leader. He's been a voice. He's handled his role great. He's been a man to deal with. So has Martin. You know, Farrell's career, obviously, this was a 3-star point guard that wasn't even in the top 150, and he had a tough night today, but he's on a lot of people's radar in the NBA, and so he's got to go and show himself at Portsmouth and all this other stuff. You know, those guys, you know, I think the one thing we talk about in recruiting with our program is, you know, guys get better here. You hang in there with us and you plug in, guys get better here. I think that senior class, you can look and say they got better with us. And, you know, so you feel you kind of prepared them now professionally, those guys that have to go out. Now they got to get agents and do the whole thing, and we'll help them with that next week.
Now, I like that comment, and I mean, it goes back to what you were just talking about with Bonzi, about how he came in less than stellar shape, and just when you look at those four guys specifically and think of what they were as freshmen to what they are now, think about the progress that they made over their careers.
I've been saying this for the last, and I've written it the last couple of times I've had something in the South Bend Tribune. Martin Gebbin is this year's MVP, team MVP. I don't know how you can say he's not with what he gave that team, because nobody saw this coming from Martin Gebbin. Even though he wins the gold medal in the World University Games, and he dominated Isaac Haas and Purdue and all those guys over there, it was let's wait and see what he does in the ACC. And for him to deliver the way he delivered against Wichita State with those two free throws, the way he delivered in the ACC with a steady stream of double-doubles, I never thought I'd see the day that Martin Gebben got 17 rebounds in an ACC game.
Yeah.
And was like the one steady factor through all of this. The injuries, the ineffectiveness, the losing streak. There was one guy that you could count on every single night in that lineup, and it was Martin Gebben. Like, I know it's going to be odd to see how they construct the year-end awards banquet or the year-end awards ceremony and say, make sure Matt Farrell gets something or Bonzi Colt. Like, but Martin Gebben's got to be the MVP. He just has to be.
I agree.
And Matt Farrell, I always remember the recruiting story of Matt Farrell because I'm sitting in my hotel room in Greensboro, North Carolina, the night before they played their first ever ACC tournament game, Wake Forest, first game of the day in front of select dozens at Greensboro Coliseum. And I get word that Notre Dame's got a commitment that night, and it's Matt Farrell. And I'm like, who the heck is Matt Farrell? So I did a little background research on him, and he was a three-star guy. Wasn't really highly recruited, committed to Boston College early in his senior year to kind of just get it over with and take care of that. And then I see, well, you know, his grandfather went to Notre Dame. His brother was best friends with Theo Riddick, who played football at Notre Dame. So there was a real Notre Dame tie to the family. But talking to Matt Farrell and even seeing Matt Farrell here his first year, I'm thinking, this guy's never going to play. Like, he just, because you had Demetrius Jackson. And lo and behold, how it turns out, Demetrius Jackson goes pro early. If Demetrius Jackson does not go pro, Matt Farrell is not a Notre Dame graduate. Matt Farrell is not a second-team All-ACC honoree for the University of Notre Dame. Matt Farrell's playing somewhere else because he didn't have one foot out the door. He had like 1 3/4 feet out the door because Demetrius had taken his playing time. And I always remember... There was the one game, when Notre Dame played in the ACC tournament in Washington, D.C., the open locker room after the game, so you walk in, you can talk to whoever you want to talk to, and they were wearing their mustard gold jerseys, like I like to say, and the people at Notre Dame get mad when I call them mustard gold. But Matt Farrell was nowhere to be found, and his gold jersey was just lying in the middle of the floor, right on the floor of the locker room. Like, I've had it. I'm done. Forget this. I don't think he might not have played. It was the time they came back and beat Duke. I think it was an overtime. They beat Duke, and everybody's all happy. And Matt Farrell's jersey's just laying in the center of the locker room on the floor. Farrell's nowhere to be found. Little did we know later that year that Matt Farrell would start in the NCAA tournament. And like Bonzi Colson, once Matt Farrell went in the lineup, he wouldn't come back out.
Mm-hmm. That's right. What kind of shot? I know you said he's going to get some looks, but he is an undersized point guard by NBA standards. And I'm trying to think off the top of my head, how close are he and Demetrius Jackson in terms of height?
Similar.
Yeah.
But I think what helps Matt Farrell is TJ McConnell, Philadelphia 76ers. Like, Matt Farrell is going to get a look. Just like Demetrius Jackson got his look. Matt Farrell may not get drafted, but Matt Farrell is going to play summer league basketball. What does he do with it? Does he find the right system? Demetrius Jackson, for all his talent and his ability to score, he just hasn't found the right fit. And it's not going to happen in Philadelphia because they're... When they're
from one wrong place.
Well, he went to three wrong. Well, yeah. Houston was good. Yeah. Like, Houston was the perfect situation for him. Boston never was going to work for him because there were too many guaranteed contracts, and they had to win. They were ready to win now. They can't take their time developing Demetrius Jackson. Houston was perfect for him. Why it didn't work out that way, maybe it was a contract situation where he ran out of days with his two-way contract, and it's just... So he goes to Philadelphia, and look, Ben Simmons is going to be the point guard with the Sixers for another 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not going to work there. But Matt Farrell is going to get a look what he does with it, just his ability to run a team. Like, NBA people can figure out, if you're a point guard, they'll figure out pretty quick whether or not you have what it takes to run a basketball team. And if you don't, you're going to be a journeyman. If they like what they see from Matt Farrell in the right situation, I can see him sticking. in the right situation. Yeah. That's not saying he's going to get drafted. It's not saying he's going to be a major minute guy, but a back of the end of the rotation guy where your two main ball handlers need a break, Matt Farrell can come in, make shots, and get other guys involved. So we'll see.
Will be very interesting.
Never a dull moment.
End up. Nope, none at all. It is 32 minutes after the hour on Budweiser's weekday sports beat. Tom Noy, Indy Basketball Insider. We'll talk a little NCAA tournament hoops coming up next. Get some of Tom's thoughts on the craziness from the first weekend and look ahead a little bit at this second weekend with a Sweet 16 starting tomorrow night here on WSBT. Budweiser's weekday sports beat, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Here's your Sports Center update on Budweiser's weekday sports beat. Despite an initial report by Yahoo Sports to the contrary, Bonzi Colson tells the South Bend Tribune that doctors have not determined if he broke his foot a second time. Colson is in a walking boot and on crutches and says he's still trying to get things figured out, whether there's a break or not. Spring football practice continues at Notre Dame, and Irish defensive coordinator Clark Lee and offensive coordinator Chip Long will speak with the media tomorrow morning. You will hear some of their comments tomorrow night on Budweiser's weekday sports beat. Notre Dame's pro day workout is tomorrow as well. Nine former Irish players, including Quentin Nelson, Mike McGlinchey, and Equanimeous St. Brown, will participate. Malik Zaire, who used his grad transfer to play at Florida last year, will also work out. And St. Joseph's University has hired Jill Bodensteiner as its first female athletic director. Bodensteiner spent the past 20 years in Notre Dame's athletic department, including working as the women's basketball team's sport administrator. St. Joseph's is also Muffet McGraw's alma mater. So that's your sports beat and sports center update for tonight on WSBT.
Tom, I'm going to throw you a curveball.
Okay.
You know that Bonzi Colson clip that you played at the beginning?
Yeah.
Can you play that again real quick?
Sure. The one about whether or not he considered not playing?
Yeah, I think the one, your question. Let me see.
Okay. Here we go.
No, I wanted to play. I missed so much of the season. I wanted to play. I wanted to cut down nets and MSG. That was never in my mind. I wanted to go out there and play and just enjoy the game. You know, you can't take this game for granted. You know, God's blessed you with talents, and I just wanted to go out there and just play my game. And I was playing with passion and energy, so that was never a thought for me.
Okay. Okay. You know what I find interesting?
What's that?
That was the last game of the season, right?
Correct.
There's an awful lot of background chatter in that locker room going on from the players for a team that wanted to be there and a team that wanted to get to Madison Square Garden and wanted to hang a banner. They didn't seem too broken up about losing to Penn State.
Yeah, and there was...
Now, you were there. I wasn't, so
I sensed a little bit of relief.
Really?
Almost.
Like,
that,
okay.
And granted, I'm reading into it, but that's just kind of, it seemed like, you know, NIT, all this crazy stuff happened, and then compounded by Bonzi's injury, it seemed like maybe there was a little bit of relief.
And this is why I bring that up. Honestly, when I was listening to some of that audio, I was at the Riley semi-state game on Saturday.
And the majority of people, it's funny that you say that, because the majority of media were standing there around Bonzi Colson at the time. So there were very few other people.
Not a lot of players
interviewed at that point.
Yeah, not a lot of media talking to players. It struck me when I was listening to it at the semi-state game, where I've been in that Notre Dame locker room at the end of the season, mm-hmm. whether it's an NCAA tournament game or whatever, where that locker room is open and nobody says a word.
Right.
There are people crying. There's nobody talking. They're devastated that it came to an end. The Kentucky locker room after the Kentucky game at Quicken Loans Arena mm-hmm. last year in Buffalo, it's absolute silence. This one, there was a lot of chatter going on.
And it seemed like there was more of that after the Miami game
mm-hmm.
where when they lost another close game.
Right.
It was like that was kind of the verdict, it seemed like, because you still didn't know if Bonzi was coming back. That sort of seemed like NCAA.
It was it.
There seemed like more of that kind of stuff after that game than after the Penn
State. And I bring that up, that the point, that just the locker room chatter talk up, because I've written that I don't think this team was invested 100% in the NIT, and people are emailing me and saying, you're wrong, I disagree, this, that. They bought in. I don't think they ever bought into the NIT. And I think, like you said, when the end finally came, it was more relief because this team had been on such a high wire act really ever since Matt Farrell got hurt against Louisville, to where they knew that if they had any shot of going to the NCAA tournament, they had to win almost every single night out. And the more they lost during those stretches where they didn't have their best player and they didn't have their second best player, the more it just wore on them. And I think it wore them down to the point where when it ended, it was more relief than it was sadness as to, it's just finally over.
Yeah, and I mean, if you compare Hampton to Penn State, they actually, I thought, to their credit in that Hampton game, because it was Hampton, 9 o'clock, there was hardly anybody there. There wasn't a whole lot of buzz in the building. I felt like they did sort of, they had a good energy about them in that game, more energy than they had against Penn State. And I don't know if it was because just the way Penn State played, they were so much more physical and everything else. But they never seemed like they were able to match that same kind of energy in that game.
Was it as ugly in person as it sounded like?
At times it was.
Was it?
Yeah.
Where you're just like, ugh.
Yeah.
It can't come out like that.
Yeah. So. Just
some there are some seasons that you don't want to ever end. And there are some seasons covering Notre Dame basketball where you actually are relieved, and this was one of them, because it was just one incident after another, injury, ineffectiveness, losses, to where it's just like, man. And to hear that Bonzi Colson gets hurt at the end of the third quarter was just
the final kick in the...
Yeah, and it was. Everything. This team...
I'd say kick in the gut, but it wasn't a kick in the gut. It was a little bit lower than that.
Just when you thought they had taken their final gut punch...
That's right.
...a week earlier, not even a week earlier, on Selection Sunday, when Bruce Rasmussen says Notre Dame was the final team out. And if Davidson would have lost that game, Notre Dame would have been in. You thought that was the final gut punch.
Yeah.
It wasn't. It was Bonzi Colson, foot injury again, season over. Let's just turn the page and move on.
There was more. Yep, absolutely right. First weekend of the NCAA. Thoughts on a crazy weekend, Tom?
Crazy. I didn't do a bracket. I never do a bracket.
You don't?
I've never realized that. I've never done a bracket. I'm not one of the 51 million people that have done an office pool bracket. It's just, there's just too much pressure on me because I'm the basketball guy and I've got to win it at the office. And every time I've done it in the office.
You don't know as much as you think you know.
Well, look at this guy. He's supposed to be the basketball writer. He doesn't know what he's talking about. If I would have done a bracket, I'll honestly say at least two of my Final Four teams were out. I had Xavier winning it all. I did not have Virginia going to the Final Four. I think I had Xavier Michigan State in the final game if somebody said, hey, why don't you do a bracket? Xavier and Michigan State would have been there. But it's just like, and we say it every year. I know it gets tiring and it's redundant, but just when you thought you'd see one level of crazy. Like, I went to bed Friday night before the Virginia game ended.
Oh, you didn't watch it?
I didn't watch it. I had to get up early. I'm like, and I took Friday off because I was working all day Saturday at the semi-state, so I knew Saturday was going to be a long day, but... When you start watching games on Friday at noon, by 10 o'clock, even me.
That's what I'm like. Sunday, it's like, oh.
You're just basketballed out.
I know.
Like, it was fun to go to Lafayette all day and then get back home in time and watch the end of the Michigan-Houston game. Like, I was invested in that game because it was the only game I really watched all day. So you're into it. But when you're watching basketball all day, by the time 10 o'clock rolls around, you're just tired of the TV timeouts and the whistles. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to bed. And then I get up Saturday morning, and I have all these text messages and emails from friends and my family members saying how much the ACC is overrated.
Of course.
And how bad Virginia is for college basketball. And I woke up Saturday morning, and I'm like, Virginia had to have lost. Why do I have all these text messages? And sure enough, like, they just didn't lose. They got wiped out.
Man, and that's, UMBC would just not let them back in the game. They just hit big shot after big shot. Let me ask you this, Tom. Was DeAndre Hunter that important to Virginia? Or considering UMBC shot 12 out of 24 from three-point range, 54% overall, would they have won that game anyway?
They may have won it. Like DeAndre Hunter, that was a huge loss for Virginia. And that's almost like I don't know if it's as severe as Notre Dame losing Bonzi Colson, but you take one guy out of that system, like it runs like it's a system,
mm-hmm.
where you take one guy out of the equation and now everything's thrown out of whack. You don't have DeAndre Hunter doing what he does defensively, doing what he does help wise on the backboard, offering some stuff offensively, to where everything's thrown out. But when you can make shots against that defense, like, teams don't usually, Tony Bennett banks on opposing teams not being able to make 12 threes because mm-hmm. they're so scattered. They don't know where the ball's going. They panic a little bit because the possessions are shorter and you don't get that many chances. So when a team does make those 12 threes, that puts all the pressure on Virginia.
And it forces Virginia. They started putting up threes that they didn't want to.
And that's not the way Virginia plays. Right. Like, they Virginia'd Virginia.
Yeah.
Like, Virginia plays like Navy football. Everything runs like a fine-tuned machine. But if Navy football gets down by three touchdowns, it's really hard for them to come back. And that's the same way with Virginia. Virginia gets down by 12, 10, 12, 15 points. That's really like 30 because they're just so methodical, they can't score points in a hurry.
Yeah.
So, but the 116, it was bound to happen. It finally happened, and it couldn't have happened to a worse team because that's all we heard going into the tournament was Virginia's good, but they never get to a Final Four, or they never get to the second weekend.
And now they lose to a 16.
And now they don't even get out of the first night. Ouch.
Big time. All right, we'll talk more, including where some of these coaches of these Cinderellas might be going. Will they be staying put? Might they be moving on? We'll get Tom's thoughts about that. And which of the 11, 9, and 7 seeds he thinks has the best chance to reach the Final Four. We'll do that when we return. Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports league. We are just a little bit less than 6 minutes away from the top of the hour and wrapping up Budweiser's weekday sports beat, along with Notre Dame basketball insider Tom Noy from the South Bend Tribune. I'm Sean Steyers. And again, the top story of today is Bonzi Colson. Originally reported by Yahoo that he had rebroken his foot. Tom Noy talked to Bonzi Colson today, and he said, not so fast, has not been determined whether or not there is an actual re-break of the foot. They're still trying to get it figured out. So hopefully,
stay tuned.
That's right. Hopefully it's just some pain and discomfort and it's not a break and things work out. He's in a walking boot and on crutches right now. Sweet 16 coming up. You'll hear games tomorrow and Friday. The Sweet 16 from Westwood One's coverage of March Madness on WSBT. Crazy first weekend like we were talking about. UMBC won the first game, got knocked out, though. But now you've got 11 seeds, Loyola, Chicago, and Syracuse still in it. 9 seed, Florida State, and 7 seeds, Nevada and Texas A&M, all in this weekend's Sweet 16. So which do you think of those teams has the best chance to reach the Final Four?
Nevada.
Give it to Nevada?
Yeah.
That's what I think, that Nevada might be the tougher matchup for Loyola Chicago than even Kentucky, even though Kentucky's got the big name.
I'm loving Loyola Chicago, and it's not because of Sister Jean. My mother is a graduate of Loyola School of Nursing, so she was a Loyola person. But Nevada's really good.
They are.
And I'll skip ahead to your NBA question or your coaching question.
Okay.
Eric Musselman coaches Nevada.
Uh-huh.
He once coached Troy Murphy at Golden State. So I can't see Eric Musselman leaving for another job, be it like Connecticut or Pittsburgh. Eric Musselman's an NBA coach, and he might parlay this into another NBA gig the way they played, because you watch them play. And I was, and I loved how I love how CBS has all the scores on the top of the screen as I'm I forget what game I'm watching.
Uh-huh.
And when they were down big,
you're like, yep, there it is.
Yeah, they were down 22. So I'm like, all right, I don't have to pay attention to that game.
Might have been Cincinnati, because that's what I was going to flip over once.
They were down
something else.
They were down 22 to Cincinnati, and I forget what game I was watching. And then I look up, and they were down 8. And I'm like, whoa, where'd that? And so I went back and flipped to, and they just like some of the stuff they run, and that's like a pro offense right there.
This is where promotions come though for these mid-major guys, and you've got Porter Moser at Loyola Chicago. He's been there since 2011. Ryan Odom at UMBC, the son of Dave Odom, the former Wake Forest head coach. He's been at UMBC since 2016. Now, you mentioned a couple of the jobs, and you've also, UConn is open. Louisville is open. Off the top of your head, Pittsburgh is open.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Crean has already gone to Georgia.
Perfect fit.
And you've got Danny Hurley at Rhode Island, and he was kind of the hot guy coming into the tournament. So, do you think any of these guys are moving on for maybe one of those jobs or something else?
I think Danny Hurley's gone. It's either going to be Pittsburgh or Connecticut for him. Porter Moser, that's kind of a tough read. You know, it's a perfect situation for him at Loyola, but they're strapped facilities-wise, budgetary-wise, financially. It's a hard job, like, with these coaches.
I mean, it's a school that, quite honestly, a lot of people didn't even know existed until last week.
Right. And if you're a coach and you're at a mid-major school like a Loyola or a Nevada and you're making $750,000, it's a pretty good gig.
Mm-hmm.
But if a school's going to offer you $3 million, like they're going to offer Danny Hurley at Pittsburgh for $3 million, coaching is such a short-term business. You got to get while the getting's good. Like, you've got to go and get that paycheck. You got to chase the paycheck because you don't know where you're going to be in 5 years.
Do you think that UConn is still a prime job?
No. And we could have a whole show. But we could talk more about this on Friday.
Yeah.
Because nothing killed college basketball more from a one school standpoint when the Big East broke up than Connecticut. It went from a national power to a national nobody.
Now, at the same time, you did have a coaching change because you had Calhoun retiring. Kevin Ollie was there. He did win a national championship in his second season, but he was a 7 seed doing it. He still won a national championship.
No,
you're right, but it's been downhill since then. The ACC played a big part in that.
Well, the conference that they played a big part in that.
But like them getting out of the Big East and not being able to get into the ACC and all the other schools going to the ACC.
Connecticut and Cincinnati, two programs that were really, really strong and formidable in the Big East, really became afterthoughts because of what happened with the breakup.
I mean, the women's game and the men's game,
mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what. There's no sense getting into this.
Let's
in
go Friday.
Seconds.
We'll go
get
Friday.
Into this Friday. We'll like you said, we could do a whole show if we want.
And we will.
On the UConn situation, and we can get into that. All right, we've got 15 seconds left here. So
I got you want me to say something in 15 seconds?
I'll talk to you Friday. How about that?
We'll listen to basketball on these airwaves tomorrow, and when Weekday Sports Beat, we'll be back Friday.
Tom and I are back on Friday. We will talk to you then. Darren is back tomorrow.